today with my guest, CG Grace, on the Too Old for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie.
You can come and find me at angies.com, that's angie-s.com, or on my Linktree link, which is linktree.com/Too Old for This Shit. Both links are in the show notes, just like every week. Listen, that's the place you can go if you want to be part of my community, if you want me to show you how to create your own podcast and get involved with what I do. I'd love to see you there. So if you like the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you are listening to right now. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show.
In today's episode with CJ, who's a former BBC broadcaster and infidelity author of the book The Adulterous Wife, we discuss infidelity and how to overcome it, whether you choose to stay or not. She herself had a husband who had an affair with a woman half his age. So we went into that, and also how to learn to trust again and how to be careful not to demonize the unfaithful partner and mistress slash mister, plus many other things. Please help me give a very warm welcome to CJ. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, CJ.
Hello, thank you so much for having me on the show today.
No, thank you for joining me. Yeah, I'm really interested in talking about this topic we're about to, you know, we're going to cover today, which is around infidelity and how to overcome it, and whether you choose to stay or leave with your partner, you know, after the affair, you know. So, you know, you've written a book about it, you know, about your experience around it, and you obviously you talk about it, you know, everywhere, you know, around the world. And so before we dive in, CJ, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Yes, I'm CJ Grace, infidelity author and former BBC broadcaster. And in fact, you know, it started off with me living what seemed like a charmed life. I had a dream job as a journalist with the BBC. I was meeting celebrities, politicians, fascinating people who were making their mark on the world. And then I had a transfer to work for China Radio International in Beijing. And there I had a fairy tale falling in love with an American that I met. And our 25th wedding anniversary was the best one ever. We spent it in Hawaii, where we'd got a second home. And I really felt like I was in the land of the gods. But little did I know that just 2 years later, both my marriage and my health would be in tatters. My husband was openly carrying on an affair with a woman half his age, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So, you know, it was a double whammy that left me reeling, and I felt like the ground had been kicked away from underneath my feet. One of the things that I did to reclaim my sanity was to write, to get back to my BBC roots, and I wrote about what was happening to me as far as the horrible experience of infidelity. And also I spoke to loads and loads of other people, and I put a book together with all of our experiences, and I managed to find a way through. I managed to find a way through it that genuinely made me feel better and happier than I was before. You know, I feel actually happier now than I was in the marriage, which is hard to believe, but it's true.
Yeah, but isn't it almost like, I mean, the word insane is not the correct word, but how sometimes going through, I mean, hearing with what you're saying, you know, going through that kind of, you know, horrible experience, and on top of it, you got cancer, you know, at the time, and it's just, you know, you came out of it. Do you feel like you got some answers? Like, you know, what is it that you feel that you come out of it better? Which I totally believe you, and I, you know, this is something that we see a lot, right? People go through hardship, and it can either go one way or the other. And you went, you know, thank God, you know, the way up. Like, do you know why?
Yes, because I found a way to get through it. I developed a 6-part plan, in fact, that I used. I didn't think that I was going to just do it, that somehow that was what came to me as the way to sort out my problem. I found confidants and mentors that I could really vent with and get good advice from, and they were the rock. That, you know, these people were the rocks for me to be able to get through this. I'd let a lot of my friends go, and I only knew people who were friends from our marriage. And I found that I had to also recreate a whole community of friends, both old and new. That was very, very important. Mm. Another thing that was critical with having been reared on Monty Python from an early age was laughter therapy. I made sure that I hung out with people who made me laugh rather than brought me down. Mm. I watched comedies, not depressing dramas. And even though I'd always followed the news as a former BBC journalist, I gave up watching the news because it's all bad news. I mean, you know, that was just going to be bringing me down. I also paid attention to my body. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to become beautiful like a, you know, a supermodel, but I tried to sleep enough. I tried to eat well. I exercised, and exercise was huge. Exercise to get healthier and banish the blues. I found that if I exercised outdoors, it really lifted my mood. It was absolutely critical to just get outside in nature, move my body. And that was key to feeling better. Then the next thing that I did was I wanted to find my passion and be more of a hedonist, because during the marriage, I hadn't made time to do things I enjoyed. It was more nose to the grindstone most of the time. And really, if you don't do that, you're not really living. You've got to have things that you enjoy. And I found that I reconnected with my creativity that had been squashed throughout the marriage, really. Yeah.
Well, it often happens when we're in partnership. I mean, I feel I'm often more prolific when I'm single. I don't know why. But yeah, I do find...
Especially women.
Maybe I don't know how to pick them, but I...
No, I think it's a female thing.
Yeah.
You know, Angie, it's so easy to sublimate your personality in service to your partner because mm-hmm. you love them and you really believe in what they're doing. And obviously what they're doing is more important than what you're doing. Not necessarily, but that's what I believed. So... You know, you end up becoming an appendage of your partner rather than a person in your own right. And I think I did very much become that person, and I am no longer that person, and I never will be again.
Do you think that maybe have contributed to his affair? You know how you said about we become an appendage to the partner? Not to blame this on you. I'm being the devil's advocate here, but you know.
There's a dynamic. There's always a dynamic. There are hundreds of reasons why people stray. And in terms of whether there's somebody to blame, the blame game isn't great to really get hooked on anyway. But yes, sometimes... there's a reason for it. Marriages sink into celibacy, for instance. And if that's the case, if somebody ain't getting fed at home, he's going to go for a takeout, you know?
Exactly.
So, and celibate marriages are sadly very, very common, especially in long-term marriages. Mm. And that's also a key part of the equation.
The relationships are not easy. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, I'm out here, you know, I want to say as well, like I've written down a few things I want to ask before we move on too far down the line. Based on some of the things that you said, I want to sort of like ask you about. But just as a bracket, you know, I'm out there dating, and, you know, because I'm feeling in the mood again, you know, spring has just happened. So I feel a bit, you know, and now in the summer, so I feel a bit more open to it again. But it was weird. Like last night, I came home from a date. You know, I went out, you know, for a walk in the park. It was really sunny. Went to the restaurant. It was nice. But then I was just like, I got home and I'm like, oh gosh, I was seeing this couple in front of me. They were walking their dogs, and I was just thinking, oh, they look so bored. And I was just, I was like, you know, I don't want to like. So sometimes, just like, I kind of go, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, sometimes I'm really excited and optimistic and I want to have a partner, but I don't want to be in a suffocation kind of mode. So I mean, I think relationships are, they're not easy. I mean, you know, you have to work at it, and I think some marriages they work at it, and they still have, you know, a bit of va-va-voom and like juice in them, you know, and they still have sex. But it takes, like you said, it takes two people to want to make the effort and know how to even make that effort to keep it interesting and be two separate people who have full lives while they, you know, sharing an emotional life together, you know, and build a life together. It's quite complex, isn't it?
Yeah. And the longer you're together and the more you're having to deal with raising the children, dealing with taxes, all of those are passion killers, really. Yeah. I mean, I think children are probably the biggest contraceptive out there.
I know.
They really are. And one of the things that I know you dealt with in a previous show, which is very serious for a lot of women, is the damage that happens after having children, childbirth. Mm. And I actually had that. I had pain from sex after my second child. I didn't realize that there was anything that could be done about it. It was years later that I found a pelvic floor therapist, and she was a fucking miracle worker. Literally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you can go to, I think I know which one you mean. Is the episode that's called What's Wrong Down There or something like that? Because I know I've had, and I haven't had children, but I had to go and see someone in my 20s because I knew something wasn't quite right down there. I'm so glad I did. And it took me on the whole journey of, you know, trying different things. And honestly, I'm so glad I've done it because you just don't know. We just sort of accept it. But I'm not like that. I'm like, something's not quite right. Let's go and see who can help me. And well, I'm glad I did. Yeah. So but it's interesting. It happened after you had children. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, and I heard that in France, they actually prescribe pelvic floor therapy to women after they've had children, after childbirth, which is a really good idea because it stops the scarring and it gets you back to the way you were before. At least that's the hope. Yeah. And I didn't realize that there was anything that could be done. And there is always something that can be done. And there are some really great therapists out there if you are able to locate them. Yeah. And it was amazing. And it certainly made the sex life I had with my husband after I sorted that problem out. It was absolutely great. Mm-hmm. And that was what was really even worse, finding out about his affair, because it happened when we actually had a pretty good period in terms of how our sex life was. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's not the first time I hear that, to be quite honest. It's weird. It sometimes sounds like when people have affairs, the sex life improves because there's that bit. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on there. Okay, can I just ask you, because obviously, a quick yes or no, like, are you still with your the husband that had the affair?
No. Well, I mean, it was funny because if he had been willing to give up the other woman, the final lady that I found out about, because he had been having affairs throughout the relationship that I didn't know about, to be quite honest, and this is a controversial view, I was very glad that I never knew about his affairs when the children were younger.
Because
if I would have had to have gone through that and had to think about, well, do I want to leave? What about the children? They're going to grow up in a split home. I'm really glad that I didn't have to deal with it in retrospect. Yeah. And a lot of women would disagree with me, but I was glad that I did not know, because by the time I found out about the final lady that he wasn't willing to give up, the children were grown and out of the house. So it wasn't such a big deal. And if he had been willing to give up this lady who was half his age, I would have stayed with him. And it would have been a big mistake. So actually, I'm grateful to both him and the mistress for what they did, because I'm so much happier than I was before.
Yeah, it's just also so cliche, isn't it, that he goes with someone half his age. It's just like, it's that disappointing detail almost. It's like, really? Oh, it's just so annoying. It's just so cliche that
it is.
It's just kind of you're just a dude, you know what I
mean? And you know, the thing is that when I first heard about it, it certainly makes you feel incredibly old and unattractive, that's for sure. And my ex was one of these people from whom compliments were as rare as palm trees in the Arctic, you know. And so I really didn't have a great opinion of my appearance, because that was quite a crushing blow. But then once I ended up with a boyfriend who was very loving and incredibly complimentary, he was always telling me how he loved the way I looked, and I felt so much more attractive. But I had the same body, hadn't changed. It was just how it had been appreciated by somebody. It made me feel like it was more beautiful, you know?
Yeah, but this is also why we really have to get that from ourselves, you know?
Absolutely.
It's funny, because when I was younger, I used to notice that if a guy didn't compliment me, you know, someone I was with, whereas now I don't even notice it. Like I don't need it. I just don't need it from them. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just right. Like, well, he's here. He's clearly enjoying the view. So, you know what I mean? It's almost like it almost doesn't matter, because I'm just like, well, I'm enjoying my view. Like I've had, you know, it's been a long road to get to feeling this comfortable about me and my body. And there's nothing wrong. I'm sure if people look at me, they go, oh yeah, big deal. But you know, it's whatever happens internally, right? It's how what we see in the mirror, what it represents to us. And that was the issue I you know, went on. And I had, like, you know, I was yo-yoing with my weight as well a lot in my 20s. So that didn't help either. But now I'm like, I don't care if I'm bloated or if I'm a bit bigger that month or a bit smaller that month and my boobs are a bit smaller. I don't give a shit anymore. I'm just like, well, I you know, you sort of learn to love yourself from within. It's just so much stronger, and it's so important, so important, because we can't let anyone else push that button, really. But I'm glad to hear that you were a loving boyfriend. I think it's important to give, like, those word of affection. I think it's weird as well if someone doesn't do it after a while, you know. You kind of, yeah, that's a bit weird. But even if you don't need it, you know. But I had a question, because obviously that one thing is, I really like that what you did after finding out about the infidelity is that, well, actually we can say affair, right? Because it's not like it was a one night stand. It sounded like it was a full blown situation.
It was a full blown affair. Yeah. So, and actually I want to say that I liked what you were saying, because it's so important to feel complete in yourself.
Yes.
And not feel that you need a partner to complete you, that mm-hmm. you're inadequate unless you have a partner. That really means that you're needy and you're putting an unnecessary burden on the person you are with, and you're not going to attract a really good relationship. So so important to learn how to feel complete in yourself and joyful and creative in yourself with or without a partner, so that you don't need somebody to complete you, and then you're going to find somebody who is going to be valuing you, because you value you.
Yeah, you need someone who's an added value. It really is, like you said, like, you know, adds value. It really is, because we have to be like, it's like we're complementing each other, you know. It's like friendships. I am not my friend, they are not me, but when we're together, it creates an exchange, it creates a buzz or a fizz or whatever it is that we want to call it, right? That interaction that either gives you comfort or makes you laugh or makes you think differently. These are all intangible, right? But they all add so much value. And I think it's that dynamic with someone else, which is, that is the bit that I really love about partnership. You know, it's like that exchange and how much I grow as a person when I am actually with someone, you know. Like so sometimes I feel like my growth is a bit stunted because I'm, you know, I'm very comfortable being single. But sometimes I feel like I know that when I am in a relationship is how usually I sort of grow a lot, you know, in myself. But what I wanted to say though, what I wanted quickly to say and then to ask you a question, like, I really love that you said that after you found out about the affair was that you went out and you spoke to others, which is so important, because I think a lot of people sometimes they may feel they don't, it's a hard thing to talk about, because I think also maybe a lot of people may not fully understand how it feels. I mean, I don't know how it feels like to be married for 25 years and then find out that, you know, he's got a full-blown relationship on the side. I mean, that is something I can only imagine, the pain. I can only imagine it, but it's like, so I don't even know how I would react, you know, other than obviously being, you know, really upset. But it's just like, I just love that you went out and spoke to others and that you're so publicly speaking about it, because I think, like, with anything like that, we shouldn't let we shouldn't keep it in and feeling, you know, some people may feel all kinds of different feelings, like whether it's shame or guilt or whatever it is, or they're just not sure, should I speak to someone? Because what if I stay with him? Then people are going to, you know what I mean? There's all these thoughts that go around in our heads. But I love that you spoke to others, because that is probably like a big important part of going through it and getting over it eventually, you know? So I had like this really weird question, but did he have any remorse? Because obviously he went on and did this for so long.
No.
So he wasn't really thinking about your feelings in my mind.
No, he reckoned that, you know, it was, he said, well, you know, I don't want to throw myself under a bus. Life is short. And, you know, and I understand where he was coming from. That was what he wanted. And it was in some ways as much a symptom as a cause of the breakup of our marriage, because I think that if he was needing to be with somebody else, I clearly wasn't enough for him, and he would have been quite happy if I would have stayed and put up with his infidelity, with him having this woman. It was quite weird that once I found out, he actually offered me a part-time wife position. You know, I could be with him half the time, or maybe even more than half the time, and he could be with her a few days.
Look, I don't want to say mean things about someone you shared your life with, because obviously 25 years, it's a long time. But yeah. I gotta say, CJ, he does sound a little bit full of himself. I think.
Well,
I think like I am. It does sound. It's just his approach is a little bit like. It's almost like women are lucky to be around him. And I think him cheating on you isn't so much to do about you. Like, you know, you said like you weren't enough. And again, I'm not a therapist, so I'm not qualified to say any of those things I'm about to say, but this is just my opinion here. But I feel like however he treated you, the fact, it sounds like he's a serial cheater. So I'm pretty sure whoever he's with now, that's his way. Because like he said, he was willing to offer you a part-time job very kindly, right? Really lovely.
Well, you
lovely
know,
chance.
I would do the taxes and he could, I would do the taxes and she would provide the passion. So
well, listen, he better be, listen, if he said that to me, I'd say, you better be paying a lot of money for me to even consider being around you. You know what I mean? It's just that it sounds like, you know, like you said, life is short. So it was all about him. You know, he didn't consider your life and your time by the sounds of it. But I feel like the reason why I was asking about the remorse thing is because...
No remorse.
Right. See, that to me, that's the key thing here. Because I... Now tell me where... I don't know. Maybe tell me if I'm completely wrong or where you stand on this. But it's weird enough because when you contacted me, it was kind of like it came at the right time because I this is another guy, this is another date I went on. First date I went on, great date, great, you know, liked him. Then went on a second date and then he started saying things, and the reason why I was like, no, was his attitude on things. So basically what he'd explain is that he had been married for 16 years on the first, and he'd been divorced for 8. Right. So he'd given me the timeline. And what he'd said was, I didn't ask him any questions, by the way, around it. He just sort of volunteered all this information, which, by the way, as a bracket, that's what I do on dates. You just let them talk because they will reveal themselves, man. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You just got to let them talk. Yeah. So what he said is that he'd been married for 16 years. And, you know, the reason it ended was that, you know, he couldn't touch her anymore. He said that, you know, she didn't want him anymore. And that's why he said that he couldn't touch her. It wasn't because he didn't want her. He said, you know, she wouldn't let him, I guess. And in my mind, when he first said that, I was just like, that was on the first date. I was like, well, that's a bit weird. Because I know from experience, I don't know about you, CJ, but when I'm turned off by someone I'm seeing, it's because of their behavior. It's because there's something going on. It doesn't mean it's their fault necessarily, right? But it's that there's an interaction going on. There's a break in communication. There is something that's happening. It's not because all of a sudden you change taste in, you know, in what you find attractive. So
right, because what you were hearing was half a story.
Oh, 100%.
But half a story.
Exactly, half a story. So he'd given me that info on the first day. Then on the second date, Now I can say this freely because he doesn't listen to this. He doesn't know the name of my podcast. So then on the second date, what transpired was that he sort of like, I think he was trying to make himself sound good, but it backfired on him. So he sort of randomly said that, you know, oh, at work he'd slept with this married woman a couple of times. She stayed over at his flat, they had sex, and but then she wanted kids, and so he was like, whoa, you know. And I was like, what, with you? You know, I mean, after you have sex with someone twice, you don't necessarily want to have their offspring, you know what I mean? I didn't say that to him, but I just went, he was like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. But then, you know, he was saying, like, as a bachelor, and I'm like, you know, I'm not, that's, you know, and I was like, okay, it was weird that he tells me, but, you know, I'm not necessarily judging him on that, you know, that's what happens, you know, around town. But then he said that he'd had an affair with a married woman for 10 years and they broke up a couple of years back. So basically what it meant was, when I calculated, was that he'd had an affair 4 years before the final divorce. So let's say probably, you know, divorce takes about 2 years in the UK, roughly, I don't know. But basically he'd had an affair at the end of his marriage. And I did actually push back. I was like, oh, wait, I asked him, so was that the person, you were with her when you were married? He was like, oh, yeah. So he'd had a full-blown affair while he was married with another married woman. So there was two things that transpired to me. Was that, one, he didn't seem to, I couldn't hear from him that he was like, yeah, you know, I obviously did something, you know, it's not correct, it was bad. Or he didn't seem to feel bad, or he didn't seem to also realize that he kind of been used by this married woman, who never divorced her husband, by the way. And he said, he was like, I don't even know why I did that. That to me was like a massive red flag on top of everything else. There was so many red flags I could make a scarf. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those. And he was like, wait. So one, he doesn't know why he had a 10-year affair with a married woman. Two, I don't hear him say, yeah, that, you know, he obviously deceived his wife, ex-wife. You know, and I'm not saying, I don't know what her story is. You know, she may have had an affair too, but he saw my reaction and he was like, he realized he'd said too much. And he said, oh, what are you thinking? And I said, well, all I said to him was, well, I feel like you're still in the process. I feel like you're still processing this. He was like, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, you said like, you're not sure why you were with her, had a 10-year relationship with this married woman. And you said, he'd also said like, he hadn't really processed his divorce. And it sounded so messy, right? And I was just like, yeah, I said to him, you know, look, for me, I don't want to get involved in this. I'm going to get, you know, caught up in the mix, and I can't do this. And he was like, okay. And it was a bit, it sucked, you know, because, you know, you meet someone, you kind of like their company. But all of a sudden, he became this unattractive person. Like I was like so turned off. And the next day, he sent me this huge text and he was like, oh, it was just so emotional, and like on his side. And I met up with him for a coffee. I shouldn't have done that. That was my mistake. But do you know what he said to me? Because I said to him, you know, why are we meeting up? And he was like, well, you know, he wanted to see me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, is there anything you wanted to clarify or something about last night? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay, well, just so you know, like my position hasn't changed. I'm not, you know, this is not something I want to pursue. And he was like, well, I feel like you're judging me. And do you know what I thought? I was just like, I thought in my mind, I was like, does he want a medal? Because to be fair on him, yes, I was judging him, actually. I was. But what really to me was, I mean, I'm not judging on people's mistakes. We all make mistakes. But to me, what I was really turned off by was that there was no remorse, no regrets, and he hadn't learned from it. Because I said to him, what have you learned from this experience? I don't know. And I'm like, I can't. Do you know what I mean? It's like this. And he said that my reaction was very strange. And I was like, well, you were honest. I'm honest back. I respect your honesty. And he said he felt judged. And I was like, well, I didn't want him to feel judged. I was like, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying, I just don't like how you haven't processed it. I don't feel like you've processed it. But that's to say, like, to me, that that's the bit to that I find there's a difference between people, right? Some people are a little bit, it sounds, I wouldn't say he's a narcissist because I don't know him enough.
But yeah, he was a bit Asperger-ish. His personality was a little bit Asperger-ish. And I don't think he would not filter sometimes what he said and not realize that what he was saying people could get offended by. And that was just
because the only
way,
time he realized, you know, he went too far, he said, was because of my reaction.
Yeah.
And I think what was the really off-putting thing was that he was so self-absorbed. Like, he didn't realize that maybe people, I said to him as well, maybe people react the way they do because it's self-preservation. Maybe I have to also be careful for me. You know, you don't know nothing about me. So, you know, it's like, it's this very self-absorbed approach. And I feel like that's the bit, there's a difference between people, right? People, we all make mistakes. And let's say if I was to cheat on someone, I know one of the things that would really break my heart is knowing how upset this is making them. Knowing that I'm the one who caused their sadness. And when someone doesn't have that in them, it's that coldness, that self-absorption, that very self-centered kind of attitude, like the world revolves around them. And that is what I cannot be with. I cannot be around people like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And there's always an element of deception. And when you have deception when you have a serious deception in a marriage, then it really does put a wall between the two people. Even if they don't realize it's there, it is there.
Mm. Like, how did you even learn to trust again? Because I know you said you had you have a lovely boyfriend now. I don't even know where you begin to deal with that whole situation, you know, when you found out about it. But how did you learn to trust again?
Well, the thing is that I didn't particularly trust my ex, but I didn't want to tar other guys with the same brush because they weren't the same people. Mm. And I think this was just a modus operandi for my ex. That was just how he was. He even came up with a comment saying that if you aren't naturally monogamous, monogamy is in effect a prison. That was his view.
Well, that is true, but he shouldn't have promised you fidelity, right? Because that's the point. Like, he could have chosen someone else who was polyamorous. I mean,
he was slippery on that one. And it was funny because when he was doing working out of state and out of the country, I think a lot of the people he worked with had this idea that we had an open relationship. On his side, it was an open relationship. On my side, it was not. It definitely was not a consensual open relationship.
But that's the problem, right? And also, would he have been okay with you being out there having boyfriends?
He claims that that would have been the case, but we never discussed that. And I never wanted to while I was with him. I was too damn busy ministering to him, ministering to the business we had together and ministering to the children. To be honest, I didn't have time. I wouldn't have had time. And I didn't have the inclination. And certainly, you know, before I knew what he was doing, I absolutely did not have the inclination. I was a very, very monogamous, faithful person, for good or ill.
So would you say that, to circle back to what you just said, to me, it almost sounds also like it's what you agree on, right? Because that's where the deception is. Because some people are, you know, like you said, some people are openly polyamorous and both parties know it, or they're semi-polyamorous, so one person is allowed to go out, but the other person has no desire to. So there
and I would say,
right? It's an agreement.
Yeah, it's an agreement. But in many cases, even when you have so-called consensual open relationships, I think often one partner is less into it than the other, and they're
100%.
Just doing it in order to hang on to the other person.
Absolutely.
That's the only way they can have the relationship with them, and they would much rather have them to themselves. But if they have to share them with others, then, you know, they put up with that.
Yeah. And also sometimes people change their mind too. So they may have started off with being okay with it, and then they go, you know, actually, I don't want to anymore. And it's actually having that sort of dynamic that you can go back to your partner and say, I know we agreed to do poly, but right now I don't want this anymore. I want us to just be us two. And that it takes a lot of trust in the relationship to be able to go in and change your mind, because that's okay too, you know? But I would say, like, you know, I know I was asking you, how do you trust again? But then I realized in your answer, there actually is not so much about trusting men per se. So let's say if you're seeing men, so let's say, you know, or women, whoever, like to not to trust someone else, but it's very much almost about trusting ourselves that we're making the right mm-hmm. decision, or that we'll mm-hmm. be able to discern if we need to.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest bit when we evolve, right? It's like, for me, sometimes I'm also like, oh, can I trust this feeling when I'm meeting this person that they're actually good for me? Or am I just attracted to this, the toxic dynamic that I used to be into without realizing before? It's like, it's once you learn something, it's trusting ourselves. And that's right. The bit that's the right. Big road,
and I mean,
you know, I feel.
It's funny, there is so much hypocrisy too in the whole infidelity thing. I mean, I remember when I was talking about this to a close friend who had been very promiscuous herself and had lots of affairs, was very, very judgmental about my husband and more judgmental than me, and came out with this wonderful statement. She said, "All men are cunts," she said. The one thing that men don't have.
Right, exactly.
They yeah. have cunts, you know, so why yeah. would you use that to describe it? It was just ludicrous, really, because, including the guy you're married to that you're actually very happy with? No, surely. So, I mean, that was kind of a silly thing to say. And another relative of mine who was actually actively having an affair at the same time as being really, really heavy on my husband about how awful he was, I should divorce him immediately and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, she didn't know what the situation was. And one thing that I really wanted to emphasize was that I felt that demonizing him was wrong. You know, he wasn't a demon. He was just a flawed human being with good points that drew me to him in the first place and bad points that made me think about leaving, you know. Mm. But it's one of those things. People always have to demonize the unfaithful partner. They demonize the mistress. What's she doing? She's pulling away this hapless guy who can't help himself. She's pulling him away and dragging him out of the relationship, and she's evil and you should run her over with a train. I mean, those are views that are sort of really not helpful, and they're not going to help the person who's been cheated upon get through it, get out of the dark hole and move on and make their life better than before. You just have to get out of that vengeful mode because it doesn't serve you, and it didn't serve me, and I tried to get out of that type of thinking as soon as I could. I mean, obviously you have that right away at the when you first hear about the infidelity, but I really did not want to be sitting into that horrible, nasty negativity.
I guess it's one of those feelings that you don't want to stay stuck in, but it's mm-hmm. one of those feelings that I think with anything in life that you need to go through, like the anger, basically, because it sounds like a lot of anger, you know, when we demonize people or when we thinking of revenge and all this kind of stuff, it's based on a lot of anger, right? So, but it's almost like a stage that is important to go through, because when we're feeling sad, we'd be sleeping all day. We don't actually do anything. We're very inactive and disempowered. Whereas anger actually forces you to go, oh, this is not an angel. This is not the person I thought it was, or the situation, or whatever it is. And it helps us to go to sort of like almost demystify the situation or demystify the person. We have to go through those feelings of anger, but then we have to move on to moving on, basically, because otherwise we get stuck and we're poisoning ourselves with all this anger. We have to go through it. You know, I think of it in this way, right? It's a bit like, you know, no one goes and demonstrate, you know, go on a protest because they're sad. No one is going, oh, I'm so sad. They're going to stay at home, right? They're going to be so upset. But the minute someone's angry, they go, fuck this, I'm making a placard and I'm going to write something. I'm going out there and I'm going to do it. So like anger is very powerful. It's very empowering at times, right? It's an important feeling. But like you said, if we stay there, we won't be able to have conversation. We won't be able to move this along. We won't come to any resolution.
Whether you have it with
your cheating spouse or not, but you need to have this conversation with someone or yourself to just, you know, to move on almost, right?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that was really important before I made any major decisions, I wanted to try to make sure I didn't make those decisions based on my emotions. I had to stop and think, is what I'm about to do going to serve my own long-term best interests? I tried to ask myself that question pretty much with everything I was doing, because it's so easy to really screw yourself over because you're acting on anger, revenge, and all of that kind of stuff. I had so many revenge stories, and they sound funny when you hear them. I mean, for example, I heard about a contractor who was so angry about his wife's infidelity that he filled her car with cement. And everybody I tell that story to laughs. It's really funny, you know?
Oh, wow. I don't think it's funny. I think it's crazy. Revenge.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, because that's impressive. No, I tell you why I don't think it's funny. It's because that person put in a lot of thought and work, because not only do you have to like prepare the cement, get the cement to the car, fill it up without anyone like seeing him and calling the police before he could get stopped. So like, I mean, that is really, I mean, there's like some work gone into it. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a bit scary.
You know, where does a couple go from there? They don't go to, it's definitely not reconciliation, and most likely they're going to have an expensive acrimonious divorce. And, you know, it's going to be very hard for a guy like that to ask his wife for any, say, online passwords he can't find, such as for banking or his music collection, or to negotiate over the custody of the kids, you know?
Well, I don't know. If I was the wife, I'd be like, well, he needs to buy me a new car now. I mean, you should put cement in someone's car. Anyone else's car, you'd have to get them a new car.
Yeah. And right? Then what's ridiculous is that whatever the value of the car is would have gone down as part of the assets to split. So he sort of destroyed one of the assets that they would have been splitting. So, you know, a lot of people do these revenge things. And there's so many websites I saw, vitriolic websites, full of all these amazing revenge strategies. But it's sort of pointless. Why not put that life energy you're spending on revenge into moving forward, you know, and feeling that you're going to be thriving? Because that's the best way to thrive after infidelity, is to use as much energy as you can into making your life better and moving forward. And I mean, it doesn't mean you have to be a doormat. It means you're just getting on with it and not focusing on having to punish your spouse, because it's not going to serve you.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I can understand people feeling that way, but I think there's obviously a big jump from thinking it to doing it, and it, like you said, like it doesn't actually serve us. But I can't. I mean, it must be hard though, because it
serves the divorce lawyers. They make a bloody fortune, especially in America.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really depressing job though. I mean, how can you even believe in love after you do? You know, as a divorce lawyer, this must be hard. But it's like, I think, you know, it's the deception, isn't it? It's not even so much the act. It's like someone has lied to you day in, day out, and looked you in the eyes. I think to me, that's the worst bit. It's the, I'm dumb? Like, what is it, like you don't respect me enough to be honest? Those are the things that, of course, we don't want to think about the act that they're doing, but it's really,
yeah, but the fact is, they know damn well why they're not telling you, because then the whatever they have in their home life is going to collapse.
I mean, yeah, because then that's they lose you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why my ex really would have rather I just didn't hear about it, and he would have just been able to have all the wifely services that I provided and the passion from his girlfriend. And that's why when I found out, he was offering me that part-time wife position, not because he really wanted to have me in his life, because I don't really think he did particularly, but just because of all the services I provided and the life we had together and all of that in terms of the lifestyle and all of this. And that's why I think a lot of women end up staying with unfaithful men. They want to stay with the man, but they also don't want to give up the lifestyle. And it's very, very common in celebrity marriages, I think, too, that one partner just puts up with it because they want to stay. But
yeah,
I mean, it's not a happy situation. Definitely not a happy situation.
It is difficult. It's definitely difficult. Can I ask you a bit of a naughty question?
Yes.
How's sex life now?
It's great. It's great, better than it was. It's absolutely great. I mean, apart from the fact that, you know, my boyfriend's in London and I'm in Hawaii, so COVID has sort of clipped our wings somewhat and we haven't been able to be as together as we would like. But, oh, yeah, it's so much nicer to be with somebody that is into you in a funny kind of way. And you know, when you get stuck in a long-term marriage, it's very, very hard for that sex to stay fresh. And it's very, very hard not to end up being in bed together and talking about really passion-killing topics, as I said, like doing the taxes, repairs on the house, trouble with the kids, all of that kind of shit does not help you feel randy. It really doesn't.
Yeah, it's a lot. But can I just ask you, because obviously now, you know, you've written a book and you're on, you know, I mean, you've spoken on the BBC and you name it, around infidelity, you've been everywhere, you know, spoken everywhere. And so I wanted to ask you this one question. What is like the main thing that you've learned from all of this, from this whole experience of infidelity and writing about it and talking to people about it? Is there anything that you've that comes out more than anything else?
Yeah, I have learned that the most important thing is to work at feeling complete in myself and not feeling that I need to have somebody else to complete me. I've mentioned that earlier, but that is really the most important thing, because it is so easy to lose yourself. And I will not be willing to give up my personality to serve another guy. I just won't. And I think that it would mean that the relationship would not be good, because I wouldn't be myself. I would just be, as I said earlier, I would just be an appendage. And so I learned that that is really important, that I have to preserve my personality. I have to be able to be a creative human being. And that's what makes me feel happy. That's what makes me feel joyful. That's what makes me want to get up in the morning. And I think that everybody needs to find that. They need to find themselves. The marriage collapsed and I found myself. It sounds like a cliche, but that really is what happened.
Yeah, well, I can understand. Obviously, you know, you're married 25 years, you know, you were a different person 25 years. You know, when we meet the partner, right, we're different. Especially if you've been in someone for that long. So you are really rediscovering yourself. So I guess maybe, you know, if we are in my mind, I'm thinking an amazing relationship would be a relationship where I actually evolve and grow and I keep learning about myself and the other person. But sometimes we get stunted in relationships too. Like, I know I say, like, I feel like my growth has been stunted by being single. But at the same time, I think it can happen too, maybe in marriages. You know, we get used to stay in the role that we play and we do the same dance every day. But some other partners will bring out, they will want you to thrive. They will want you to be happy. They will want you to feel beautiful. They will want you to, because they get nourished by seeing you happy, you know? And I think that's definitely a quality that I think all of us need to be looking for. I mean, I can't tell people what to do, but I think that, to me, that's something I'll definitely look at. It's like, how much does he act, you know, how, you know, is that person, you know, what are their intentions and what is their heart, really? What's in their heart is so important, that they want the best for you. That's, it just makes such a difference, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things that I always like is when I can laugh with somebody.
Because
you can't take things too seriously, and life is sort of, you've got to laugh or you cry, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
If you can't laugh with somebody, maybe they're not the right person for you.
I
stopped laughing with my ex. There was an amazing comment he made, which was, he said, he was talking about his girlfriend. He said, she's so much more inherently joyful than you. And the fact was, he was absolutely right, because the relationship had squeezed all the joy out of me. Yeah. And when I went back to England after we were separated and saw my friends, they said, oh my God, it's like we have the old CJ back. Because that's just what happened. I had a sense of humor with him at the beginning, but after a while it just dripped away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one of those things that is so important, to keep that sense of humor, to keep the joy in a relationship.
And probably the hardest part is to keep a sense of ourselves regardless what's going on in that relationship. But it can be really difficult. I mean, I know it. Sometimes I can feel it can really drain me out if I'm not with the right person. And then I'm letting it happen, you know? It's I can see it almost. I can see it in pictures too. When I look back, I'm like, oh my God, like I almost like look different. I can see the drainage.
Right. I mean,
the energetical, drain.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same story, you know, when I look at some of the pictures of me maybe 20 years ago, and I'm sort of more bloated and not looking very happy and plumper and all of this. And I think, wow, I mean, I'm in my 60th, in my sixth decade now, and I feel like I look better than I did 20 years ago because of the fact that I'm, you know, living a healthier lifestyle and just generally happier.
Yeah. And you can see it as well on people. I can see sometimes, I mean, obviously everyone goes through ups and downs. Like, it's not going to be like a merry-go-round all the time. But you can see when people have been together for a while, for a long time, years, and they still have that, life force in them. They're still showing. They still have a sparkle. And they're going to have moments where they don't want to talk to each other. There are times where they're going to be very unhappy. And it's being able to go through those phases. But if you go through those phases, I believe, I'm still need to experience that, but I believe that you come out and you're actually even happier because you've gone through the stuff together and you've worked on yourselves, and now you are in a different place and you've even better than before, right? So it's being with that part, accepting there's going to be the dips, ebbs and the flows, but eventually you know couples who are great, they're actually a joy to be around, you know, but they're quite rare. I don't have many. There's not many.
I know a few. I mean, I know a couple that they met when the wife was 12.
Ooh.
She was 12, he was 27, and she knew that he was the man she wanted to marry.
Wow.
And they are still together 50 years later, 50, 50 years later, and very much in love.
Oh, my God.
So she waited until I think she was 18 or 19 before dating him.
Because 15 years, that's not a big of a gap. I mean,
it's not a big gap when you're mature, but between 12 and 27, it's a big gap.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, at my age, someone's 15 years old, I'm not even going to blink. I'll go on a date. I'm fine. But yeah, at 12. But I guess like they obviously, it's almost like a soul connection, I would say. Like that's
But 5 decades later, they're still really happily married and still in love.
And do you know why?
I don't know what their secret is, but they're very loving with each other. They're always, you know, arm in arm, holding hands. It's beautiful to see them together.
What would it take for you to stay after infidelity? Because I know with some people, they do stay. Not necessarily sort of like in your situation, but in other couples, people stay and they work it out, right? But would you say, is it that thing? Is it the remorse thing? Is the fact that that person is not as... actually feels what it is that they've done to the other person. They have more compassion. He's not so much of a robot as your ex sounds to me. Sorry.
Well, if the person that's been cheating is willing to give up the girlfriend or boyfriend, then you've got a chance at making the marriage work if both partners really want to do that. And the person that's cheated has to really want to work at loving his wife or loving her husband again and not wandering off with any other boyfriends or girlfriends. But more importantly, the person that's been cheated upon has quite a bit of work to do, because unless you are able to genuinely forgive your partner for cheating, you could end up with a purgatory rather than a marriage. Because I've seen cases where they've stayed together, but the wife who was cheated upon is so lacking in trust, and she always has to see what he's doing. She doesn't want him to do anything that she's not there to see. And it's almost like he's living in a prison, and that's not good. You've got to be able to let go and trust again. And it can be done. I have actually come across marriages that have got better after infidelity. And it's been because both partners have realized how valuable they are to each other, how much they really want to be together. And they've put in the work to make it better than before. And they've even recharged their sex lives, which you can do, and all kinds of things like that, so that they're happier than they were before. But it does take work.
It does take work. And I think it's also like, you know, the person who cheated, you know, and if they're remorseful and the couple is both willing to see their part in it, or the misunderstandings and so on, is that the, like you said, like if it's a purgatory, then that person who cheated is now going to have a fear that the other person is going to do them one over, because now they almost have permission. Without having permission, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's that fear of that revenge, right? But
well, in a way, you know, but it's funny. But then
you go down to a down spiral, you know?
Right?
And it's like, then you may as well just break up almost. You know,
that's right. But I can think of one example of a couple that I know where the woman was unfaithful very early on in the marriage. And had a public affair, and then the guy was unfaithful secretly later. But the woman was really very angry when she found out and felt very betrayed. But you know, some people might say that she had changed the terms of the marriage by being unfaithful earlier. So you know, it's a very gray area. But once one partner is unfaithful, yes, sometimes that can change the dynamic, and then the other partner starts being unfaithful, and then I think in some ways you even if the marriage stays together, you're not going to have a very close relationship.
But I think also with that, you know, with the example you just said, so she was unfaithful earlier on, and then he secretly later on was unfaithful. I think when she finds out, I'm trying to put myself in her shoes, as much as what she did was wrong, obviously, you know, and so on. But the thing is like, I think when someone cheats because the other person cheated, what happens is that it feels like revenge, and it adds a whole other layer of destruction, if that makes sense.
Right, but sometimes people cheat because the other partner gets very involved in something else. Sometimes it's work, sometimes
it's... But what I mean is that there are mistakes. Well, we make mistakes. So let's say, you know, someone cheats and they go, oh, you know, and... But when someone cheats on you because it's also revenge, it's a different thing. It's to me, it's a bit the equivalent of, so let's say I'm driving down the road and I by mistake hit someone, right? Crosses over, right? It's a mistake. It's 100% a mistake, right? It's awful. But the person, you know, let's say they survived, they broke a leg, you know, my car broke their leg. My insurance covers, you know, I'm apologizing and so on and so forth. But then two years down, that person comes and find me and runs me over on purpose. Not the same. Does that make sense? I know it's not a great analogy, but it's the sense of like on purpose doing the same because you did it and now you're going to feel my pain. It's a very different layer. But what I want to...
Yeah, but I don't know whether that's necessarily always the reason. Sometimes the infidelity after the other partner's been unfaithful is because there is a sort of disentanglement that happens from the first infidelity. And also, you know, if, say, the person that was unfaithful first has sort of drawn away or got involved in activities that aren't conducive to being close to the other partner, then the other partner could end up having affairs. There are just so many different hues in this. There's not really a one-size-fits-all answer.
No, it is. There's a lot of hues, and you know, you're probably familiar with her, Esther Perel.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So she, you know, she's a therapist, and she's a therapist, you know, she specializes in infidelity. And when you listen to the couples in the podcast, you know, this like therapy being recorded is really eye-opening. And, you know, the way she talks about it too, you know, on her TED Talks and stuff. And I think it does show, you know, how complex it is and how there are, like you said, you know, earlier, it can either make a marriage stronger or a partnership stronger, or it could actually just help it being the end. Maybe that's just what it needed for it to end, to be this catalyst. But there is so many reasons why people do it. And so I guess I'm just saying this because for those who listen, you know, there are therapists out there who can actually help understand, because I don't think we need to go to any kind of run-of-the-mill therapist. Everyone has their own specialities nowadays. But if it is that you wanted to make your couple work, there is actually therapists who specialize in that, and they'll have the understanding from both parties. And so, yeah, so I think this is really great that, you know, you write a book and you create all this awareness, because it's obviously something that's very complex, and it's a conversation that, you know, we may not often have, you know, we definitely don't have that with just, you know, well, neighbors or,
no,
you know,
and probably your neighbors would not want to admit if they were unfaithful.
Oh, listen, I wouldn't even want to know, because I'm like, oh, now I have to be, you know, now I know, I don't want to know, like, it's because they're my neighbors. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, there are just so many temptations out there for people to be unfaithful, sadly, and it is drearily common. There's no doubt. Infidelity is definitely on the rise, especially amongst women, because generally, men are more unfaithful than women, according to the statistics I've seen. But women are starting to slowly catch up.
I know quite a bit of women who are.
Yeah, unfaithful. And as we have more longevity, then there's more time to do it. And because of ED drugs, guys can keep bonking till they kick the bucket, basically.
I know, it's not fair. Yeah.
So you know, in the old days, they used to stop after a while. But now, you know, we've got longevity, we have Viagra, and that, I think, also increases the amount of infidelity. And it's just, you know, the grass is greener on the other side, and it's sort of new and unfamiliar and exciting, and that's one of the things that might happen. But what's interesting is when particularly a guy leaves his wife for the mistress, who's much younger, and then ends up marrying the mistress and finds that he's made a big mistake, because he's married somebody that he had great sex with, but he doesn't necessarily have the same kind of emotional and intellectual connection with the much younger woman than he maybe had with his wife. And I've heard quite a few cases of that happening, where there's a hell of a lot of regret, because, you know, the woman was great for an affair, but not necessarily for a second marriage.
Well, I say, once the hormones are, you know, have dissipated, that whole the lust thing, which is a great, you know, it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
Then you
the
see the
teenagery lust. Yeah.
You see the person. Yeah. And I think it's a bit, it's that wake up call. It's a bit like, you know, on a different scale, but you know, like we've all experienced this. We go on a date, like I had, the first date was great. Thought he was great. He wasn't like, he's not a typically, I got attracted to his, well, to what I thought was his personality on the first date. I wasn't attracted to him like sort of physically per se, but then I got attracted to him, you know, through the date, because he was, you know, we're having, you know, it was a great date. But then on the second date, the minute I found out about that trait in him, all of a sudden he was like ugly to me. Nothing had changed, but I think it's so when people have this like lusty affairs, they get blinded by all the sex, right? It's on a whole bigger scale. And of course, all of a sudden, you know, after a year or two, they're like, oh, that person's actually not that nice, or they're a bit boring, or they're quite mean, actually. Yeah. They're a bit mean.
Because the sexual zing's gone, and you realize, Christ, that guy's pretty
boring. It will blind you. It will blind you.
Yeah. There's a great quote from the financier Sir James Goldsmith. He's deceased, but he was pretty promiscuous, and he said, when a man marries his mistress, he leaves a vacancy. He marries the mistress, and the mistress becomes the wife, and then he finds himself another mistress. So it becomes a continual
chain. It's almost
chain.
Like there's a vacancy open, is what
there's a vacancy open. If he marries his mistress, he's going to need another mistress.
Right, yeah. Well, if you leave love for sex, all of one day that sex is going to get boring because there's no love behind. So, I guess in very simple terms, I don't know, but yeah, I can see how that could happen. So, CJ, just before we round up today's episode, I just wanted to check because I know you said you had a 6-part plan and we sort of like you started to go into it. Did you mention all of the parts in that 6-part plan on how to deal with infidelity?
Well, the last one I didn't mention yet, and that is actually the hardest one, the one that I had the most difficulty doing, but I think it's probably the most important. And that's the fact that the past is gone. You can keep churning in your head what you did and how it could be better, and we wish you did things a different way, but the past is gone. And then you can worry about the future, about, oh, well, how's it going to be? Will I ever be with another guy? And what am I going to do? And all of this. But the future doesn't exist. All you have is the now. And so I put a lot of time and effort into working at living in the present and becoming more mindful and fully engaged in what I was doing right now. And people, even if they're not dealing with infidelity, so many people aren't living in the present. They're still, you know, churning the past and worrying about the future. And it's so important to try to do that, because if you're not living in the present, you're not really living, you're just existing. So I would say that's a really good thing to practice, techniques to help live in the present.
And that 6-part plan, that's a plan for after you found out about the affair, correct?
I used it to get through both infidelity and breast cancer. Mm. And that was really what got me through and got me out of that horrible, deep, dark hole into basically learning how to feel more complete in myself.
So can we just like really briefly, can you just name the 6 points without explaining them? So obviously you explained the 5-1 at the start and now you just went into the 6-1. But just as a recap, just say like what the 6-part is.
Yes. Number one, find confidants and mentors with your best interests at heart. And they could be friends or paid counselors. Number two, cultivate existing and new connections who are friends of your own rather than people you know through your spouse. And try to have friends of both sexes because you get different views from either sex. Number three, laughter therapy. Hang out with people who make you laugh rather than bring you down. Number four, love your body and become beautiful. And by that, I mean, look after yourself, sleep enough, eat well, exercise, especially outdoor exercise to get healthier and banish the blues. Number five, find your passion and be a hedonist, making time to do things you enjoy rather than constantly keeping your nose to the grindstone. And then number six was past is gone, future doesn't exist. Only the now exists. Work at living in the present. So that's the 6-part program.
Thank you so much. I really love that. And, you know, and especially, you know, like letting the past die in the past is such an important thing to do. It's not easy, but I try and remind this to myself, like just in life in general, because otherwise we get into our heads and worry and over minute things, you know, not just about the big things. Like, you know, obviously these are for like infidelity and when you had cancer, but even like in the small things, we can practice that in the small little things. If you had like an interaction, someone annoyed you, but just to let it be, just let it die in the past. It's a little mantra I sometimes try and have in my mind, and it's so important. I really, really love this. Thank you so much, CJ. If you don't mind, I'm going to ask you the final questions I ask all of my guests. So the first one is, and I know you may have actually kind of already answered this through the beginning of the episode, but just going to ask you, just in case, what do you wish you'd realized or understood at 18?
Well, the trouble is, if you would have tried to tell me what to do at 18.
No, not tell you, because that used to be my previous question. I changed it. So I used to ask that months ago, but this is actually what you wished you'd actually realized so that you actually embodied something that you actually really had learned and understood at 18.
The trouble is I needed to have the life experience and the confidence to really be able to learn how to be complete in myself. I think that at 18, I was so wrapped up in insecurity and feeling like I looked so much younger than my age and not really knowing what to say to people, that was the biggest problem. And I think that there is no substitute for life experience. Life experience is what is the difference between me at 18 and me now. So if I would have realized how the world works, if I would have realized how to really engage with people, if I would have understood what makes people tick, then I would have been a lot happier and I would have had better relationships at that age. But I think that I would not have been able to gain that knowledge without the life experience that living up to, you know, 40, 50, 60 gives you.
And the second one is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
Well, it's funny because one of the things that I absolutely could not stand about my ex was that he was a TV addict and he would have the television on all the time. It drove me completely nuts. Even during sex, sometimes he would have the television on. And so that's one thing that I would just would not put up with ever again. No way. The television is rarely on around me. You know, I don't have any television that I listen to on a regular basis at all. So, yeah, that's one thing that I would not put up with. And also, I would not be ministering to a man all the time. Ministering to a man will never, ever be my exclusive raison d'etre again, squashing my creativity. That's a no-no. I won't be doing that again. Mm. That doesn't mean I won't have wonderful, loving relationships or a wonderful relationship with my boyfriend, but I am not going to be sublimating myself for their cause ever again. That's over and done with.
Good, no. Good. I love that. So, CJ, thank you so much for your time today. Can you please tell us where we can find you? Where can people buy your book? Give us all the good stuff.
Yeah, I have a book, Adulterer's Wife, How to Thrive Whether You Stay or Not. And that is available on Kindle through Amazon. And it's also available as an ebook through Barnes & Noble. And if you want the print copy, you can go to my website, adultererswife.com. And I also have a free mini ebook called Overcoming Infidelity, Tools to Tame the Roller Coaster of Negative Emotions. And that also has a wonderful exercise to learn how to live in the present that involves chocolate, because I'm a recovering chocoholic. And it was actually, I didn't invent it. It was done in schools in Britain. So if school kids in Britain can do it, I'm sure you guys can do it too. And that is also available through my website, adultererswife.com. But I have to say, Angie, it is a terrible name for a website. Nobody can spell adultererswife.com. And there is one that's spelt similar to that that is actually a porn site. So what I've done... you know, because adultererswife.com. So if you just go to cjauthor.com, that will go straight to the page on my website where you can pick up that ebook, Overcoming Infidelity, Tools to Tame the Roller Coaster of Negative Emotions. And you can get my book if you would like. So just go there. And if you are on Clubhouse, I also have an Overcoming Infidelity Club and regular events on that. So do follow me there and come to my events. So that's it. And just go to cjauthor.com and you'll find me.
Thank you so much, CJ. Thank you so much for having the conversation today with me. We really enjoyed it. I really appreciate your time on here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week.